Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Brendan Devaney is going to be joining me in a bit, but it's a good opportunity to catch up on some of your calls and comments. Good morning, Greg. I was on the Harry Blaney Bridge for the first time last week. I was astonished at it. I can't understand why our Donegal politicians, both councillors and TDs, don't levy the government to do the same in Letterkenny. I'm retired now, thankfully, but my heart goes out to anyone going through Letterkenny on a daily basis. Greg, it is Fianna Fáil who introduced this new active travel policy at a national level, and now you have the local reps claiming they're against it. Listen, no one's against active travel. It's when it's done correctly in the right place. I think any party would be in favour of active travel. Fine Gael, Sinn Féin, Independents, whatever. It's just, it's not about who introduced it nationally versus who's endorsing it locally. It's the fact that it's a good idea on paper, but it has to be in the right place at the right time, people are saying. But the caller goes on to say, bottom line, this is putting the cart before the horse as usual. We need to deal with the actual traffic issues first. Get the traffic out of the town, then we'd have time to actually address active travel. The council planners are showing themselves to be incompetent, they say, but again, it's not their fault that the national funding has been so slow in coming for the stuff that you want done, in fairness to them. And also, they're not responsible for the four lanes as such either. A lot of this is TII. The town is set between two hills. It's not a cycling town, but a lot of bikes into the future are going to have motors in them, right? So that people will be, they assist you up and down hills and stuff. So I'm not sure actual manual cycling, there's people going to have ways around that in the not too distant future. Brendan, you know, poor old Mayo, why did we do that to them?
Oh, I know,
The curse continues. Do you know what I'm going to do? Swing that mic over there, because that's
sure.
The wrong microphone.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not your fault.
No problem.
Get that one out of the road. Sorry, I should do this off air, but it's just annoying me, and I won't be fit to relax. There you go.
That's fine.
All right, it's okay. The housework is complete. Yeah, poor old Mayo. 3 pints in Cavan, though.
Yeah, don't die the championship. Listen,
And just rotate that 180 degrees for me. It's not your fault again. Not the mic over the entire mic. Okay. Yeah, not yeah. Perfect. Keep right. That. So B1's facing you. Keep B1. Going.
Oh, yes.
Keep going. Yes. Oh, can hear you now. Go on, hit me.
That's a wee lesson there, and you know, with the technical setup of the world.
It's my fault. Nothing to do with you at all, Brendan. Right. So what a finish to that game. It had it all, didn't it? In fact, there was brilliant games throughout the whole weekend.
It's funny, the clip of our commentary at the end's up on the site there, and sometimes when you hear that back, you're like...
Cringe, I know, but...
Well, kind of the emotion and I don't know, I was just delighted for Kieran Moore too, what a game he had. And when I interviewed him after, I was just saying, like, Donegal fans love seeing you on the ball, because... He is such a different athlete to almost everybody else that is on the park, you know. And when he takes off, he can't be caught. And listen, he scored 3 points. He was raiding up that left wing quite a few times. And are you going to play this thing?
I was actually. Can you hear me, PFL? Can you? Right, let's have a listen to it.
Yeah. They all got level with 15 seconds to go. That's
one last
it
play.
In plays it in.
Got to get possession now. One last play, Oisin.
This is so crucial. From Sean Patton, we are level here. The hitter is about to go. The kick goes out to the left. Up they go far. They go on the top of everybody. But Donegal have the ball. It's with Kieran Moore now. Moore getting wide. The Mayo defence. Here's a chance for Kieran Moore. Moore kicks it high. Moore kicks it over the bar.
Oh boy, Moore!
Moore has just cut Mayo out of the Ireland Championship. The game is over. Donegal won it 19-18. Kieran Moore is the hero.
There you go. I've said it before, and I'm not just saying it. I love the two Brendans, but your and Brendan and your Brendan Devaney and Oisin Kelly's interaction, because he's both. You come in, but it doesn't take away from what he's. It's hard to describe anyway. It just really, really works. The old hooter went. Point went over. Mayo out, and Cavan in.
And technically, was the draw would have seen us third and them second. So yeah, they just needed to draw, so but gut wrenching for them. All right, I was kind of joking with Kieran after. I said, if your friends and family in Mayo, because you've just dubbed about the championship, but listen, he had a job to do. And I suppose, listen, we probably owed Mayo certainly a defeat at some stage. They've certainly had it over us since 2012, so we were there to do a job. You would say that the venue where we had to go to and all that probably played a bit into their hands.
Were you surprised that Jim McGuinness was so vocal about that after the fact? You know, because, I mean, it was a win, good performance. We're into the prelims. We've got a home tie. I don't mean in any way critical at all, but it must have been something that was irking him, because when he felt he could speak freely, he made himself known.
He has every right to not be happy about it. And I suppose the thing is, where was the game going to be played?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the issue. Someone was going to have to, and rightly as he said, why was it us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Mayo had to come, listen, where would it could be played? Breffni, we played the week before, Clonus, which we know inside out. So, you know, could it come to Oma? And as he was saying, that's like them coming to Oma and staying in Derry.
Mm-hmm.
So someone had to be faced.
It always feels like it's us.
No, I was just wondering about Mayo people coming home listening to news talk on their car and Jim giving off. They're probably going, hey, we're out of the championship.
That was what I was getting at.
Well, listen, funny, we met Sean Patton this morning there, we were talking, and I was just saying, you know, the fact that where it could have been, if we had lost, you know, in a way fixture, it could have been Killarney.
Yeah.
And you think about rest and recovery, which is so huge, but the travel's massive in that. You know, them guys are going to Athlone, staying overnight, sitting on a bus, you know. So all that there impacts, because you've so little time to recover, and Jim was highlighting that as well about the week on week and that. So the fact that we're at home now is absolutely huge this week.
And it's against Louth, and it's no disrespect to any team that's made it this far, right? But could have been Galway or Cork either. So, you know, in terms of prelims, at home, Louth, not take anything for granted, but it's a good draw.
I suppose it is. My friend from Galway, he's a GA nut, he was ringing me on the way back up yesterday, and he says the last thing we want to do is go to Donegal. Nobody wants to come to Donegal, right? Even though we had that off day, I think a small bit with Tyrone, nobody wants to come to play us in Donegal. So that's the big thing, no matter who it was. Now for Louth, I suppose you've got to look at, first of all, the Louth team that won Leinster, they beat Meath. Meath hammered Kerry. That's it. You've got to be very careful. There's a kick in that Louth team. They obviously were affected by the celebrations and the length of time and all that. Affected them nearly group stage. Mm-hmm. Now, they come back against Down and probably should have got something out of that game. There's a last minute block, and Down are playing really well, as we see in the group. So, as you said, of course, taking nothing for granted, but I think Louth are better. They're probably people to get them credit for, because they only won that one game against Clare. They probably should have got something out of the Down game, and they were off against Monaghan because I think of the celebration. So certainly, yeah, they have a bit about them now.
Yeah, and we'll come back to Donegal, but Monaghan Down, watch that game too. They left everything on the pitch. I mean, you know, first and second, but they played it like their lives dependent on it. It was a fantastic game, that one. And Down looked like there was just a turning point. It was a turnover, and it was whoever got the next score would sort of determine how the game would go.
Yeah.
Monaghan got it, and sort of the Down fight had gone at that point. But it was a great game to watch.
See, funny, different games here. I was just looking back. I think Meath and Cork earlier in the group was very low scoring. I think it was 1-12-13 end of the score, and I think there was about 17 minutes gone in that Down Monaghan game, and there's more scores on the board. Like, some games are really taken off with the rules. You seen it yesterday. You know, if that was last year, Donegal would have really, like, kind of took Mayo and a real trench warfare.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday you seen the openness of it. There was breaks every time. There was savage excitement. And two teams there, like Down and Monaghan, they just went at it. You know, it was up there on hurling kind of score. Now, it did settle down towards the end.
Yeah,
but it's just something about Monaghan, probably. And you look at evolutions of teams, probably just, you know, that wee bit more experience and ability. And they obviously won Division 1, but certainly Down are improving. Great to see.
They really are, and they played really well at times there. Other results, Louth 2-17, Clare 2-14, that's in that particular group there. Tyrone 31-18 to Cavan. They kind of broke Cavan hearts early on, and we saw earlier in the weekend a remarkable comeback from Galway. I was just saying, you might focus on that for a moment too, watching that first half with Armagh, you were going, right, this team's unbeatable. That's it. You know, the tails are up. They're going to go for another one here. And then come out second half, and then it was like, wow, Galway.
hold that thought.
you know what I mean? Yeah, hold my pint. Here comes Galway. So it kind of shows that is there a form team in it?
Your two penalty misses in there as well. And listen, if you're not playing well,
and
you can hang in there. I think from Donegal yesterday, when we were on top of Mayo, we didn't score enough. We kept Mayo, and that's why we kept them in the game, but we should have built up a bit of a lead that when Mayo had their patch. What happened was we missed so many goal opportunities, half goal opportunities, a couple of easy points. We kind of let them stay within touching distance, and then they came right back into it. But as you've seen, we got away yesterday. It was interesting the way Conroy, player of the year last year, they left him on the bench. But you look at then the impact that someone has of his ability coming in. Walsh was out of sorts first half.
Yeah. But you need balls to leave a player of that quality on the bench.
There's no doubt in Joyce, big cause. I mean, Comer was to be back. He's not there again. Mm. So, you know, Finnerty and Thompson are having great years. You know, you're just looking at different players, no more than Donegal, are stepping up different weeks and really having unbelievable games. And when you have squads like Armagh and Galway, there's so many players that on any given day is going to shine. But Rafferty's performance, I mean, he's unreal. Saving penalties, scoring points, you know, he's going to be a huge threat for everybody who has to face him now in the Championship.
Back to Donegal, there was a couple of games there where we seemed to be very reliant on everything going through Michael Murphy, and some of his passing yesterday, his awareness of players around him and their movement, and that he's a link in a move, and he just frees. There was one pass in the first half where he just took the ball, turned and released it, and it completely blew the game open. You know, the in terms of it was so incisive. Have you seen enough in yesterday and in previous games? And this is no disrespect to the rest of the team or whatever, but God forbid if he twisted his knee. And we're heading into games with the likes of Dan and whomever we might meet down the line, that there's enough in there that we can, you know, we can play and adapt. I know there's other big men that can come into that part of the pitch, but we can sort of play almost as good without him, though anyone would want him in the team.
Listen, I pray he is on that team every time, but you know what, Greg?
And there's nothing to suggest he's injured, by the way. It's just a hypothetical.
I think what happens with Michael when he's in there, because he's so good at what he does, the lads will give him the ball every time he looks for it, which is right, because he'll always do the right thing on the ball. He's going to attract, he's going to score, he's going to set up, he's going to draw free. So, but if you looked at last year with Jim, and you know, Donegal won Ulster, we hadn't got Michael. So other players kind of step up and do their thing. Now, when he's in there, then you think, how do we ever play without him? And we will have to again. But yeah, players will just adapt. And you're right, that pass in the first half, reflect on. Then the one in the second, I think, was Shane O'Donnell, eyed him up. And because Mayo were marking him so tight, Michael's very intelligent around, right? How do I get this ball? Because he's so strong, he dunts the defender, gives himself a yard, comes off to Shane. And then Shane, I don't, the ability, I mean, the energy he expends. He breaks 60 yards, rejoins him on the tack. It was like an old-fashioned 11 to 14 kind of pass. But just watching Michael, just as you said there, Greg, everything that he does.
Like a talisman, you know, I think we call it in other circles. It looks like they're going to have to factor in the rally. I suspect Donegal's game will be a GAA Plus game.
It's GAA Plus. It is GAA Plus, Sunday, is it? I think.
Right, okay. So
the rally's going to be out Fanna direction on Sunday, so it's just a matter of, I suppose, people that are in that area getting across.
It's tight because there are going to be people actually are going to have to leave their houses before 9 to get to that, because, you know, up in those stages if they want to go to the game. But you have to go with what pleases the majority, don't you? Right, so nothing for granted. You're quite bullish, actually, in your predictions with Mayo and what have you, and Cavan, wasn't it?
A few weeks ago, yeah.
And you were, you know, it was a squeaky bum enough at times, but anyway, you were right. Tyrone had done us a favour effectively too, which gave us a bit.
That was after Mayo's performance against Cavan. So again, a bit like your half-time with Galway. Yeah. Be very careful game on game with teams at the minute.
Well, nothing,
you know?
Especially when now we're in the real important part of it now. The way the games are going now, like, is 7 points down at half time, you're going to watch the second half still, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, the momentum switches. I mean, the big one yesterday, probably for me, was after the Mayo goal and how we did and how that goal sneaked in. I really got a bit of a tight feeling in the stomach yesterday. There was so many small things were going against us, refereeing decisions, the black card. Even the time that Huey got the shot and the ref let him get attention and he played on, You know, like some of the stuff was happening, and you're trying to be impartial, but it's felt like a lot of wee things were going against us. The way that goal sneaked in, but then Darrell Boyd comes on, hits that wonder, score 2-pointer, and then Michael hit the next point, so we cancelled out the goal. I think that was a massive part in that second half. Again, just how we then, you could see that there's belief in Donegal, but I thought they were, you know, we expended so much energy then. Both teams were out on their feet a wee bit in terms of the break going forward. Dawson hit a couple of points in the second half, and then he hit two wides and one short. So we did probably get a bit of joy then from missed chances of Mayo. Mm. We rode our luck, as you said, a small bit. But listen, we came out on top.
Call wants to know, former, he's a Portadown supporter. Do you remember playing for Portadown? Completely unconnected, but...
Would you believe I have a guy, I met a guy yesterday from Sheffield, we were having the crack. And he's Sheffield United. And I says, I played with Kevin Pressman, ex-Sheffield Wednesday keeper.
Yeah.
So we're having just chatting to a boy from Sheffield yesterday. We're having a laugh about that. I says, I pulled out the Kevin Pressman story, but that's when I played with Portadown. Like, we had a few players playing in the Premiership, and here was me up with them going, what am I doing along with these boys?
Faking it till you make it. Can you ask Brendan, I think you referenced this, what he thought of some of the ref decisions yesterday? I felt he favoured Mayo a bit.
Yeah, listen, that's funny, just what I was thinking as well. And I met the ref coming out then, and then of course you meet him and he's all like, be nice to you.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you bottle getting on to him. It's terrible. Okay. I had a good mind to say, here lad, what the hell was that? What was this? What was that?
But and then when like I meet him then, spot.
He's all talking all, I don't really know the guy, but one of his umpires I know well, he works for Murdoch's up in Uri, and he's like, my guy in Down, you've guys in every county.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
what's
yeah,
happening?
Yeah.
What's happening? So my friend in Down would be his umpire. So they all come up chatting, and then I was like, totally bottled me getting on the ref.
It's all right. Yesterday's venue favoured Mayo and the ref as well. That neck high challenge and Thompson was possibly a red card. And another caller comments, if Jim made a bigger deal of the venue last week, it would have worked in Mayo's favour psychologically. And that is certainly a factor as well. Great to get the win yesterday, Greg, but apart from the last 5 minutes or so, it was a terrible game to watch, as were most games this year. I don't buy this narrative all about the new rules making games a better watch. It's the emperor's new clothes stuff. Granted, they are higher scoring, but that it's you see, it depends, I think, how you view games. And I've made the analogy with boxing before as well. You know, if you're into sort of the nuances of a game, the movement off the ball, the defensive elements, the fact that we count wides, but do we always factor in a brilliant piece of positioning from a defender to sort of force the wide? It depends how you watch the game. You know, if you want it all points and goals and whatever, you know, maybe... You know.
That's a glass half empty person there. Listen, you know how much I despised blanket defence.
Oh, yeah.
And how entrenched games come. But now, as I said, late on in that game, that was anybody's match. It was end to end. There was so much space, which people had shut down before. So I wouldn't agree with that at all. I mean, if this had been last year's game, that could have been 11-10 game.
Yeah.
And Donegal would have shut it down in many ways for me. Now that doesn't happen. You can only do it to a point. Now, there still is a bit of possession ball out around, but there's certainly much more one-on-ones and listen, to me, way more exciting.
Yeah, and sometimes it seems easy to break down those periods of possession. Love listening to Brendan Devaney's analysis. It's a perfect balance of knowledge and realism and good humour.
Okay. Thanks, Mum.
Is that Devaney or good point? Devaney. Right, okay, so much to break down. So we know we're playing Donegal and we're playing Louth, Down are playing Galway, Dublin Cork, Kerry Cavan. All interesting games, actually. Cavan versus Kerry, in a way, sometimes the odd games jump out to me. It could be a good watch. And then, of course, that is to make our way into the quarterfinals proper, where the likes of Tyrone are awaiting.
Yeah.
So the Senior Ladies Championship begins at home to Galway as well, so you're going to be reflecting on the men's game.
The ladies' game, Chris Daly's on to their manager. It was a tough outing against Galway's, and Galway are like heading for all Ireland, you know. It was a tough game, first game for ladies, but they're away to Tipperary in their next game out, so hoping for better there.
Yep, indeed. Listen, Brendan, your guests on the show, as you know, because you told me, former County star Ryan Bradley, thought of GA sports writer Jason Byrne, and Donegal's main ladies manager, James Daly. And that's live just after the 7 o'clock news this evening. You can watch it on our socials as well, and of course available for you to podcast. What a great subject matter you have to talk about, particularly today.
Yeah, listen, some football the weekend. Yeah. It was hard to keep up with it all. So yeah, just digest it this evening, and yeah, we'll do our best to wrap it all up.
Great stuff, and the game's coming thick and fast as well too, because they're already going to have to be looking forward to what's happening next weekend. And we're on to Monday Focus, and continuing a focus on sport, in fact. And Declan Boyle is the Chief Executive Officer of the Donegal Sports Partnership. Good morning to you, Declan. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Greg. Good
any,
to be here.
Any good juicy stories about Brendan Devaney, or will we keep them for off air?
I think so. I was just saying that you love his enthusiasm and his energy, and yeah, listen, a wonderful Gaelic player, but also extremely good soccer player. So yeah. I played along with him at Harps, you know, so a brilliant guy, top guy.
Indeed, right. Exciting times in your new world, so to speak, because the fifth strategic plan has been launched. This will sort of guide us till 2029. So in your words, I suppose, what's this strategy? What's its aims?
Yeah, listen, I suppose it's our fifth strategy. It gives us a blueprint for 5 years of sports development participation around the county. And we just, you know, we've done an evaluation of the last strategy, and there was 4.47 million invested in sport in Donegal between 2020 and 2024, which is a massive amount of money invested through the Donegal Sports Partnerships. We roughly have in the region of over 10,000 people participating in sport each year. So it's you know, I suppose the Sports Partnership has really come alive in regards to, you know, the capacity building. We also do a lot of stuff in regards to funding, education and training. And then obviously we do a lot of participation initiatives around getting people active in the community. And that's from all cohorts within the community. Yeah.
And, you know, we're in a position too, and it's nothing to do with me, it's thanks to you guys, is that you're heading into the next 4 years on brilliant foundations because, you know, the work of the Donegal Sports Partnerships recognised. So you know, it's from a strong base to spring forward.
Absolutely, yeah. And listen, I suppose we had the strategy launched last Monday, and Miles Sweeney was there, obviously, as well, and Mickey McGeehan, two ex-CEOs of the organisation. So I'm lucky to come after them, and I kind of said that on the night as well, because when they started off, it was from a low base and low funding, and I'm probably lucky enough to come in on the right side of things, where we have a lot more staff. We have 11 staff now within the Donegal Sports Partnerships. Our funding is getting larger and larger, and there's more investment in regards to the Sport Ireland into local sports partnerships and the NGBs as well. So it's a good time to be involved as CEO of Donegal Sports Partnership, and obviously with extra funding then we can do more work in the community, and that's our goal. And you know, we have to say we've 11 staff, and that covers all areas of from sports clubs to education and training to ESF, you know, club development. So it covers so many areas.
And another thing too that I think is so important about this strategy too, it's not preachy, this has been formulated in consultation with the people on the ground who know exactly what's what, you know, because often their voices, they might be sought but aren't listened to. But this is, you know, a combination of the knowledge of your staff and your leadership and all, but also making sure that this strategy, you know, avails of the great experience that's out there.
I agree, absolutely agree. And it's probably the most important element of it, that consultation. You know, you want to get, obviously, the thoughts of the staff and the board of directors, but the most important element is that community engagement, what people want, you know, what's desire out there, what activities we'd like to see in the community, and what clubs want as well, and community organisations.
And how you can support those that are doing great work in continuing and expanding that work.
Yeah, and that's the key, like, because we don't, majority of our programmes are delivered in collaboration with all our partners. So it's not just about Donegal Sports Partnerships, you know, we've Donegal County Council, with the ETB, you know, so with Donegal Local Development and its own partnerships, we have so many partners that we link into and help and support our initiative. So even though we might have a small bit of funding, when you bring three or four different partners together and they all can allocate some funding towards the program, then that's where you get success. But going back to your point, it is that consultation with the community, what community people want. And again, like in the last 5 years, our community needs have totally changed. You know, you've obviously your Ukrainian communities come into it now as well, IPAS residents as well. So everything's changing all the time in the last couple of years, you know, but to get that feeling of what people want and you know, what they deserve as well. And so it's, you know, it's about us then trying to deliver as much as we possibly can what they actually want.
Yeah, and sport comes in all different forms too. And I think really what the core thing here is recognising sport, that it could be addressing isolation. It could be addressing inclusion, it could be addressing health, and it's about sort of, I suppose, encouraging people not to just sort of, you know, do sport for a week and then that's it, but for, you know, sport and activity to become part of their lives, and for them, you know, and everyone to recognize that, you know, in whatever form you partake in it, either psychological or perhaps more so physical, but both, that, you know, this enhances your life and it becomes part of your life and it's not just a one and done job.
Yeah, no, and that's the key, probably, you know, that introduce it into people who are not participating in sport, but make it part or pathway into a, you know, a better health situation for themselves, both physically and mentally. And I suppose to give you an idea, we had some activities down in the ETU's part of the launch, and we had Donegal Down Syndrome Association, we had Manor Curling, and we had Bridgestock Centre in Letterkenny as well. So we had really three different cohorts of people. So it gives you kind of a flavour of what we do and what we're all about.
Well, my eyes were opened up on that, because I've had some of your colleagues in over the years, and do you know the one thing? The one thing that actually stands out for me, and I might say it if you don't mind, is sometimes we have a member of your staff, and then we have maybe a few people associated with the sport or clubs. And the compliments from them towards the Donegal Sports Partnership and the support and the, you know, can-do attitude and no, we'll help you out, it seems very, very personal, if you know what I mean. And when we're talking about a multi-million euro budget thing, to sort of retain that sense of, you know, community and what have you, I think is actually really quite remarkable, and you don't see it in every organisation.
No, I think, I suppose, like at the end of the day, we're 11 staff people, you know, in the organisation. The population of Donegal is, what, 150,000 people, so we can't, you know, it's very, very difficult to get around to everybody. So that volunteer aspect, that club volunteer aspect, you know, training up sports leadership, even teachers, getting them in regards to capacity building, so we know we can't attack every single avenue, but what we can do is, you know, educate and capacity build within the club sector so they can go out and deliver, you know, the programs for us in the community as well. Like we, in the last, what, 5 years, 340,000 invested in club development. Like, that's, like, you know, I know every year the money doesn't be massive, or 40,000 or 50,000, but when you put it together over a 4 year period, it's a lot of fun.
But that's not just GAA footballs. No. And nets for soccer. Like, you talked about the curling earlier on. Yeah. It could be equipment for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's how diverse we're talking about.
It is. I always say, when you're chatting from preschool the whole way up to OAPs, and it's everything in between all that, you know. So, you know, we're looking at those cohorts, and you mentioned, like, it's great, you know, as people get older, you know, it's great to see them involved in active age groups, you know, and you know, so that, like, Manor Curling Club, you know, that age profile where, you know, people are I suppose, you know, coming near retirement. And some of them, not always, but it's, you know, where they can go out and participate in a group setting where they leave the house and they go
and
have a bit of
fun. You're making it sound like a lot of fun, but they're bloody competitive.
Yes, that is.
I mean, you're making it sound like they're all,
I know,
clappy hands. They're trying to beat the crap out of each other.
Well, that's the thing.
Well,
you know,
that's the impression I got.
It's funny, it doesn't matter what age.
If you've got that in you, it doesn't go.
I know. And some people,
sorry, go ahead.
Some people don't take it competitive, but there obviously is some people are very, very competitive. But listen, you
dodgy
know what?
Dodgy approaches to other team members. Not quite. No, I made that bit up.
You know what? But listen, whatever entices people to get active and get involved in sport, and that's the key. So it's either for a leisure aspect, or it's for sociably getting engaged in the community, or if you want to go and win a curling match, that whatever goes, we're obviously delighted to see.
I want to just to get to, again, to give another example of the wide remit of DSP. Talk to me, if you can, about the project, the initiative led out by Teresa Laverty, the S4E, because this is where people might not imagine the connection between sort of social issues and sport.
Yeah, listen, I suppose when you're looking at programs, you would never see this happening. I suppose, you know, it is a pilot program for us, and we got a national award there as well, you know, to promote inclusivity in sport and physical activity. So through the Irish Federation, what happened up in Dublin 3 weeks ago, so Therese and Donegal Domestic Violence Services partnered up together to deliver a program. So you were thinking, you know, how can you put that together? But I mean, it just works a dream in regards to the program. The numbers have gone through the roof in regards to the amount of women and children that are involved as well, that are participating in this program, you know. So, you know, Donegal Domestics are Advanced Violence Services, actually. You know, they obviously have that relationship with the women that are going through the process. And obviously then we come in then and provide opportunities for them to participate in sports. So equine therapy, yoga, you know, there's 7 days of activities that are happening 7 days a week. And there's such a variety as well. And we've got kids involved in it as well. So there's multi sports involved in this. And, you know, started off with small numbers, but now the numbers are up in 80 to 90 people and participating on a weekly basis, you know. So it's actually incredible. And, you know, so listen, it's one of those, I suppose, participation programs that you'd never think on paper that it would work, but it actually works perfectly and has been very highly successful.
Yeah, and I think it's you know, sport is not just about sort of exercise or competition or recreation. It's the how important its role is beyond that as well. And we've been, I think every example you've given so far highlights that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I suppose people are coming from, you know, bad backgrounds in regards to, you know, so they're leaving that environment, coming together with a group that know exactly what they're going through. So one of the key aspects is low in confidence, you know, and that's probably key from them coming together and hopefully developing their confidence levels and for them to get to participate in sport. And I suppose they can leave the environment where it's negative and go to a positive environment. And, you know, so that's great in itself. And obviously then participate in sport. You know, we know all the health benefits of participating in sport. So, you know, and then they come together as a unit, as a group, and their friendship as well, because from that environment that they're living in, you know, they're excluded from society. So now they're coming together as a collective group and they're stronger in numbers, and it gives them the confidence to get through every day, you know, and hopefully lead into a better life.
Right. So it's not just either standing still or just simply working with those that you're working now. It's about, you know, the growth and development and recognising changing demographics and what have you. So people, presumably either organisations or individuals, can get more information at activedonegal.com, and there's contacts and stuff there.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the Facebook as well. So we're on, so anybody can go onto our Facebook page as well, or ring the office. So, that, you know, anything that's happening regards funding and opportunities and programs as well. So just go onto our website. So it's, you know, everything's there for everybody. But yeah, listen, delighted to get the opportunity to talk to you.
Is there anything else you want to add, Declan?
No, listen, yeah, I suppose, I mean, just, you know, I suppose the key four pillars probably for us is the active participation, that building the capacity as well, raising awareness, and developing partnership and sustainability. They're the four key pillars, but you say there's key actions within those, and, you know, over the next 5 years we'll be delivering them key actions, and so we're delighted to get the opportunity, and it's a new era for the sports partnership, but looking forward to the challenges that it brings.
Yeah, exciting times ahead. Declan, thank you so very much indeed. That's Declan Boyle, who's Chief Executive Officer of the Donegal Sports Partnership, and speaking in the wake of the launch of the fifth strategic plan, which will guide until 2029. Fair dues to Declan, but if we are getting government funding, it should be facilitated more than one sport. Example, State Union should be used for soccer, Gaelic cricket, various games on one well-funded pitch. If public money is being used, then the public should have more access. Are these facilities that gain these big funding being used to their maximum potential? I get where you're coming from, but this is kind of... This is not quite the same as the funding that clubs would get. Like, so Termin had a recent big opening of their sports clubs grounds. That's not necessarily the Donegal Sports Partnership. That would be national funding and local fundraising. St. Union's would be the same. So this is a avenue of public funding that is purely designed to be as inclusive as is possible, and availing even sometimes of local community halls, you know, so that people don't have to travel to Letterkenny, for an example, you know, that they can take part in their activities in Carndonagh or wherever. Not right. Two provincial champs, Donegal and Louth, playing each other to get to a quarterfinal. Provincial champs should be straight through. Yeah, I get where you're coming from, but listen, they're changing the system next year again anyway, so it's kind of a dead duck sort of debate in the rights and wrongs of this year's format, I think. Paddy's on about the rally. Well, if people think it's chaos at the Polestar roundabout on any day of the week, what's it going to be like next weekend when the Donegal rally's on and Donegal fans are travelling from Letterkenny and Fannad and so forth, attempting to get to the quarterfinals? That's in Ballybuffet. Multiple chaos. But listen, I mean, I know where you're coming from, Paddy, but if you look at, like, you know, around Croke Park or around, you know, any major area where you attract people in. I mean, we don't want to be completely isolated either, do we? I mean, we've got two big events. It's going to be hopefully a big moneymaker for Donegal businesses, and extra staff being brought in and have an extra few quid in their pockets to spend. Yes, it's going to be inconvenient, but look, Roscommon would have been very hard to get around yesterday with Donegal fans down there. It's part and parcel of hosting venues, I think, and people will adjust their plans accordingly, I'd imagine. On Active Travel in Letterkenny, hi Greg, Councillor Jerry McMonagle made a very telling comment regarding the new traffic plans. He said we have to reduce our reliance on cars. The fact is that the cycling lanes and reduction of lane width are having a catastrophic effect on traffic. It is as if the council and its councillors are purposely making it difficult for motorists. Coincidentally, this reflects the UN 2030 Sustainable Development Goals, which all the main parties, including Sinn Féin, have signed up to. I can't speak to that. I'll have to take your word on it for now. Well, part of that plan is to reduce private car ownership. Another part of the plan is to ban private traffic from urban centres and force people to use public transport. All well and good in cities like Dublin, which has public transport and healthcare facilities. Not so good in Donegal, where we have utterly inadequate public transport and healthcare services. Councillor McMonagle alluded to the new traffic plans, allowing him the option to cycle to council meetings. It appears Letterkenny and other Irish towns and cities are being used as a pilot project for the UN 2030 Sustainable Development Agenda. But, like, I'm not part of any agenda or what have you, but, I mean, like, I speak to young people, and a lot of young people, yeah, they're talking about licences and insurance and stuff, but a lot of young people, too, are talking about getting about, you know, just on public transport. They want better bus links. They don't necessarily want a car or don't feel they need a car. So we can't keep going the way it's at, where every town's snarled up with private cars. Like, you know, you have to have alternatives. You don't force people to use a bus, but you have regular buses there. You don't force people to cycle, but you provide the facilities for them to do so. How much of a percentage of a traffic does it take out? Is it 10%, 15%? I don't know what the target is, but it would ease traffic. So that's the logic, and I'm not sure it's a part of a big conspiracy. I think, you know, we've lots and lots of cars. You know, I myself, as an individual that sat in a car, I'd drop the boys to school, and I would be the only person in that car, and there would be, you know, 100 other cars with just one person in that car as well. That doesn't make sense, does it? You know, but we just didn't have access to a convenient bus service. Greg, if drivers in general around the town learn to stay... That must be Letterkenny. If drivers in general around Letterkenny learn to stay out of yellow boxes, traffic would flow better. Plan for circular road is ridiculous. I'm a resident of that area, and no right turn to shops is a pure disgrace, from Rosaline. Thanks, Rosaline. Sometimes it's hard to stay out of the boxes, though. Like, if... See outside the McGettigan's there, you know, that yellow box. I mean, if you're coming down the right-hand road, if you know what I mean, heading towards the bottom of the town, there are times that if you don't make a move, you know, and maybe roll the dice a little bit, that you would never get away, such as how quick the lights change and what have you. But anyway, public consultation believes a caller is just lip service. It's already planned, designed, etc. Very little to nothing gets changed. The public consultation for instance, will not stop it. It may adjust it, but if it's being planned, it won't stop it, whether it's needed or not, whether it's of any benefit or not. Ashlawn in Letterkenny is like a motorway every morning from 7:45 to 9 a.m, with people using it as a shortcut to avoid traffic delays. Seriously, Jerry, you're going to cycle to work as if a resident in Binion Avenue here. You honestly think cycle lanes are going to be the answer to the traffic issues at Circular Road? Wake up, please. No problem. Morning, Greg. All these cycle lanes are ridiculous. You'd want to be Bradley Wiggins to cycle up De Valera and up to Glencar. Are there any brains used in traffic to traffic in this town? Utterly ludicrous. As I say, though, I do think, you know, a lot of bikes, they do have assistant motors or are fully electric. So maybe that will be the future. Damage done in Ballybuffet at 3 a.m. on Friday past night. Porter ran guards. They didn't arrive until Saturday. Can you ask our politicians why are there no guards in Ballybuffet? Residents in Navaney Street are now concerned. Is that a fire? I was sent an image of a fire in the Donegal Road on fire. I'm not sure if that is the same thing. I'll keep an eye on whether or not the Gardaí include this tomorrow. I'm not sure of the situation you're talking of there. Go the Dunlow route to Ballybuffet. I live in Gortlehawk. It's a roundabout way to do it, but with the rally on, it's a safer route. I'll be there, rain or shine or traffic. Of course you will. A caller says, the most dangerous thing a child can face in its early development is not a lack of breastfeeding, it's abortion, which I understand where that listener's coming from, and they come in quite regularly. That is your view, and I know you must obviously feel very strongly about the abortion issue, but like, do we not do anything else? You know, like, we do also have to talk about other issues outside of the context of abortion, if that makes sense, because otherwise we'll just not fix anything until such time as you get your wish for abortion to be banned. And how is that benefiting all children? Hi, Greg, I'm a breastfeeder myself and currently feeding, and I'm all for it. But can I just add, Karen Millen fed her own three children for 6 months and she also apologised. Great to be having a conversation about it on your show, thank you. And we did talk about her apology, but it's just sort of bait sort of media or conversations. You know, it doesn't need to be said. It doesn't benefit anyone. It's a far-out view that's claims to give a medical opinion, but the person has no medical background. I know she's apologised, but still people feel the hurt. And I just think people need to be a bit more responsible. Say what you like, but just be a bit more sensitive. Catherine Corliss is a historian and joins me on the programme now. And we're talking about the start of an excavation on the site of the mass burial ground where up to 800 babies and toddlers are buried in Toom in County Galway. That begins today and is sort of the tentative beginnings of a much more wider dig. Catherine, it's, you know, the numbers we're talking of here is huge, and it's about identifying these people as well, these babies. It's heartbreaking, isn't it? Sorry to bring emotion into it off the get-go, but it's very hard not to.
Yeah, yes, indeed. It's a very emotional day in every way, and it's good and it's great that it's happening. Now, it is tough, all right, to think of the whole background of it and what happened, but it's justice, and that's the way I look at it now, and I'm very happy that it's happening eventually after a long, long struggle.
How did 800 young people end up being buried over a period spanning 1925 to 1961. Remind us as to how this could have happened in a relatively sort of modern society.
Well, the big question is, I can never answer that. And the big that so many babies and young children died in the care of a nursing congregation, Bonscore Sisters. But however, the worst of all of that is where they were buried. And that has been my focus for the last 11 years. I've been just campaigning to get them out of that sewage system. It was a defunct sewage system that was used to bury them. And on top of that, then when the nuns left in 1961 and closed up the home, there was no trace left that there were so many babies and young children buried in that area. And that really saddened me. So that is why I fought all those years for justice. And today is a good day that all that wrong is going to be undone, and they're going to be exhumed over the next year or so. Mm-hmm. And just today, I just see that all the equipment needed to take on this mammoth task, it's just they're moving it all in today, and it's just a certainty for me that this is actually really happening after all those years, and it's a good day.
And every one of these babies and toddlers, there's a story even behind the tragedy that they should be treated like this after death, their treatment prior to their death, the impact it might have had on mothers or wider families. The ripples just extend so far. Do you believe that we are talking of a figure up to 800, Catherine? How has that been established that could be the number we're discussing?
Well, all I know is, and right from the start, I started out to see how many babies actually died in the home itself, because I had never known about it until I started my research. And when I got the staggering figure from the births, deaths, marriages in Galway, that there were 796 death certs for all those babies. And we're talking about babies, young children, toddlers, all up to 3 years old. And I was just absolutely stunned and horrified to get the 796 actual registered deaths. Now, there may be more that we don't know, But and worse was to come, then I realised that I couldn't find a burial plot for them, either in Tuam or on the outskirts or anywhere. So that's when the big question came up. And then when I found out that there was actually home babies buried on the site itself, that's when I really started into my research. And it was the Commission of Inquiry then which was set up. And when they when they did a test excavation in the area of the sewage tanks, they came across chambers which contained significant numbers of bones and they were carbon dated, and it said yes, indeed, these are not historical burials. They're the home babies. So it was a shocking revelation, and it's shocking that I had to convince people that something had to be done. They had to be taken out of there and given a decent Christian burial, because all those babies and young children, they were baptised, and why they were put into a sewage system and forgotten about, I cannot answer that.
Catherine, how do you put your feelings into context or today, in that, you know, you ploughed a very lonely hollow for quite some time, and now, as you say, It's not an aspiration. The machinery is on site. This is hopefully maybe the beginning of the end. So you yourself as an individual, how are you feeling today? Are you okay? Hopefully you've got plenty of people around you just to give you a shoulder if needed.
Well, the way I look at it is I fought for this for so many years. I fought for justice. And to me today, all I see is justice for those babies and what should have been done long, long ago. And they're going to get a decent burial, a Christian dignified burial, and they're going to get a dignified plot. And as well as that, a lot of the little remains that are there, they will be DNA tested so that they may be returned to the families who want to retrieve them. And that is great. And also, it's a forensic examination. So a lot of those babies, I've always believed that they died from pure neglect and nothing else. So hopefully they will get DNA evidence of that as well.
Okay.
I mean, it's a day of justice. It's a day of all the wrongs being put right.
Okay.
And that's what I fought for, and that's the way I see it.
All right, Catherine. Listen, thank you for all you've done. Take care of yourself. Catherine Corliss there. Back tomorrow morning at 9. Stay safe and stay tuned. John Bresson's next around the Northwest.